Thanks for downloading Analysis from the BBC. Now, here's a question for you. Which is more important, the right to private property or the right of everyone for a fair share of the land? It's a burning question in Scotland, where radical changes to the law of land ownership are on the table. BBC Scotland's rural affairs reporter Ewan McElrafe asks why so few people own so much of Scotland, whether it matters, and how you can diversify land ownership in a 21st century democracy.
In 1746, an army marched north from England to this bleak moorland to the east of Inverness in the north of Scotland. And it was here on Culloden Moor that the Duke of Cumberland crushed the rebellious Scots who were following Bonnie Prince Charlie. And that victory led to a transformation of the social and the economic landscape of a country. According to many, it led to the crushing of the Gaelic culture. It led to the clearances of the glens to make way for sheep, and it led to the change of ownership in Scotland, as vast swathes of the country were given to those who supported the king. And it changed the way Scotland was viewed. It became a place for sport and recreation. But 269 years later, there's another rebellion happening in the corridors of power in Edinburgh. I'm Ewan McElrafe, and in this analysis, we'll look at the proposed legislation that could see islands, estates and land being bought by communities against the will of the legal and, at the moment, rightful owner. This bill is still at the proposal stage, but members of the Scottish Parliament are in the Borders, in the Western Isles, the Highlands and the Outer Islands, taking evidence that will shape the direction of this controversial bill that's causing consternation in the Glens.
This is the ground we walk on. It's our birthright, it's our inheritance, the air, the land, the sea, all of this is ours, so why not be able to buy it back off people, especially when it's anonymous people using it for speculation?
I think it's an attempt to throw a bone to the very left-wing, kind of Leninist wing of their party. I think it's the politics of class war and envy, and I think it's deeply damaging.
Former Scottish Secretary of State Michael Forsyth and land reform campaigner Maggie Mellon. Just two examples of the passion provoked by the proposed legislation. The Land Reform Scotland Bill is intended to rewrite the legality of owning and working land in Scotland. The bill would cover many aspects of land reform, but it's the section involving communities which has raised many eyebrows both north and south of the border. The wording is quite bland. To make provision about engaging communities in decisions relating to land, to enable certain persons to buy land to further sustainable development. And it's that last clause that worries some and cheers others. In essence, it would mean that if a landowner is deemed by the commissioner to be blocking sustainable development, then the community would have the power to buy that land against the wishes of the legal owner. So what's all the fuss about? Why do things need to change? Andy Whiteman is a researcher and an author who has written two books on land reform, and he's driven by one statistic that stands head and shoulders above the rest.
My most recent research shows that 432 landowners own half of the privately owned rural land in Scotland.
But the big question on land reform is why now and why Scotland? There are land issues throughout Britain, so what has changed here?
When I wrote Who Owns Scotland in 1996, I was fairly clear that if we wanted to reform the basics of land law, I mean just get rid of feudal tenure, we were going to have a Scottish Parliament. And there were two reasons for that. One is the Secretary of State for Scotland only ever got about three legislative slots in Westminster each year. So feudal tenure abolition was never quite a priority. And the other thing, of course, was the existence then of the House of Lords, which was full of hereditary peers, who would typically block and delay any land reform measures. So a Scottish Parliament that had legislative competence over Scottish land law, Scottish public policy with relation to land, was vital.
I think the situation in terms of land ownership in Scotland is more extreme, actually, than anywhere else, including England.
Writer and broadcaster Leslie Riddick has been involved in many campaigns to help crofters and farmers buy the estates where they live and they work. And she argues that Scotland is unique, and that's what's driving reform.
Land has played a pivotal part in Scottish history because it's been wrapped up with the history of the clearances. That's been part of, a kind of feeling that there are folk who are not originally from this parish who seem to have inordinate amounts of control. And I think the difficulty for a lot of Scots is accepting these were Scots who cleared Scots. And we've gone beyond now the feeling that it's just foreign absentee landowners. There's questions being raised now about the government as landowners, Forestry Commission as landowners, the large insurance companies that own land. Basically, we're stuck with a stagnant, inflexible system where if you want an extra 1 acre to build a house for your granny or your child, it'll never happen. Now, that's weird.
There are many different dimensions to the land reform debate. There's the emotional issue, there is the politics of envy, and of course, there's politics front and central. But perhaps the key thing, and perhaps the single issue that clouds it more than any, is the history of Scotland. And at the moment, I'm on probably the most Scottish icon that you could ever get. We're on the esplanade of Stirling Castle, and I'm with Annie Tindley, who is a historian. We're looking across to the William Wallace Monument of Braveheart fame, shrouded in mist, emerging from the mist in a stunning autumnal Scottish morning. Is this just the Scots with a 300-year-old chip on their shoulder?
We could probably say it's a bit more complicated than that. There is a 300-year-old issue, certainly. The way in which modernity came to Scotland's rural communities 300, 200 years ago through the crushing of the last Jacobite Rising and, of course, famously the Highland Clearances has certainly framed the land reform debate in quite a different way to what you find in England and Wales.
Have there been land reforms over the years since perhaps the clearances?
Yes, the first Land Reform Act, the 1886 Crofters Act, was framed specifically in terms of righting a historical wrong, that historical wrong being the clearances, which means that land reform legislation in Scotland has always been backward-looking, not forward-looking.
Are we still in the same situation? You know, here we are, Stirling Castle, looking out over battles of Bannockburn, Wallace Monument. Are we still wallowing in the past?
I would argue, yes, we are, indeed. And maybe there's good things about that and then bad things about that. So, in a sense, we cannot escape our history and we have to shape the future on that basis. But it makes it very difficult for politicians, for campaigners, to think about land reform in